Greg Cosell of NFL Films and NFL Matchup joins Ian for a weekly breakdown of all things NFL. Brought to you by Seattle Cider, not your standard cider, and by Two Beers. Life is just a little more honest after two beers. Make sure you check out both Seattle Cider and Two Beers at the Woods Tasting Room in the SoTo Industrial District. Now with Greg Cosell, here's Ian Furness.
Here we go. Welcome back as we get you ready on it. Just everything's odd these days. I guess 2020 is odd in so many ways. It's Monday Night Football, so the Seahawks are playing tonight. And, of course, that means we break things down with our good friend Greg Cosell, NFL Films, ESPN Matchup. And, you know, usually we do these on Fridays, and the last week we were off on Thursday and Friday. So I'm all kind of discombobulated. But Greg Cosell joins us, and we'll even post a clip or two on Twitter and the Facebook and all the different social medias, because I can see Greg. He can see me. It's the first time I've seen you, I think, since the last Super Bowl that the Seahawks were in back that one we don't like to talk about, in Arizona. How are you, sir?
You know what? I'm doing okay. Let's hope things can get a little under control. We keep playing football, and because the games are really good, Ian. I mean, yesterday there were some really good football games.
There were some. I mean, listen, the late game with Tampa and Kansas City ended up being great. The late game on NBC wasn't very good. Green Bay looks awful good right now in Chicago. I think we learned something yesterday before we get to tonight's matchup, both with Chicago and with Denver. A quarterback is still important in the NFL, is it not, Greg?
You know, they tell me that, so I'm coming around to that point of view. I think yesterday helped me kind of figure that out a little bit, but it seems to be the case.
Well, let's start there with the quarterback play for the Philadelphia Eagles, and you're right there in the backyard of the Eagles, so you hear and see a lot, obviously, watching the film, which we'll get to in a second. But, boy, the Carson Wentz story is something else. I mean, just a couple years ago, he's leading them to a number one seed in the NFC, obviously, yeah, right before the Super Bowl. When you watch him on tape in 2020 compared to, you know, a couple of years ago, what do you see?
You know, I think, as in most things, and you've been doing this a long time, Ian, both college and NFL, you know that when things are not going well for an offense, it's never just one thing. Now, there's no question Carson Wentz is not playing good football, but he didn't lose all his talent. I remember after the 2018 season, okay, so it was 1 year removed from where he probably would have been the MVP, and another good season in 2018, I had a general manager tell me that the two most talented quarterbacks in the NFL were Patrick Mahomes and Carson Wentz. Now, if you say that today, people, you know, kind of laugh at you, but he didn't lose all his talent. So something is not right with this offense in so many ways. I think Wentz is a tentative player now. I think he holds the ball too long. I think he has ball placement issues that are problematic every week. I think the offense has become somewhat predictable with the passing game. I think that they're not that difficult to defend tactically right now in their pass game. They ask their receivers to run a lot of individual isolation routes, and when you have a timing rhythm passing game, they have to win early in their routes, and that's not happening with consistency, which I think is making Wentz even more tentative because he doesn't feel as if he has a defined throw. So I think there's so many factors here that go into play, but the bottom line is their passing game is not very good at all right now.
It's interesting that that's the case, Greg, all those kind of things that have changed a little bit, because they have an offensive-minded head coach, a former quarterback who played for Mike Holmgren in that West Coast offense in Green Bay, albeit as a backup for the most part, but they have a quarterback. But how much is it losing their offensive coordinator? I mean, is it that much of a change? Because, I mean, we've seen that. I mean, I think you could make an argument right now that, you know, without McDaniels in Tampa, Tom Brady's a little bit of a different guy as well. Russell Wilson maybe has gotten better over the last right. year, as much, you know, all due respect to Daryl Bevel, but the connection he has with Brian Schottenheimer, it just feels like, boy, that offensive coordinator is just a huge part of the equation.
Yeah, and what you never know unless you're in the building every day, and obviously I'm not, is you don't know the balance of power, let's say, between an offensive head coach and the quarterback coach and the offensive coordinator. I mean, obviously when they had Frank Reich as the OC in 2016, 2017, they had John DeFilippo, highly respected quarterback coach. He was there. In fact, he did all their red zone work in 2017, and they were the best red zone team in the league. So you just don't know, because we don't know what the division of labor is, but clearly it's not the same. So right now, it's a pass game that struggles week to week. There's no consistency. When throws are there, sometimes they're made, sometimes they're not. Wentz, I think, is struggling too, just with what he's seeing at times, which we never would have said a couple of years ago. So I think there's just a lot of factors here that come into play. But the bottom line is they're really struggling to generate any consistency with the pass game. And now word is, and again, we're not there, word is that Jalen Hurts took a number of first down reps this week. And I think you're going to see them move in that direction. And now we get to the offseason, which is a whole nother story, not related to tonight's game, but that poses another set of issues for the organization.
Greg Cosell joining us here, the Beacon Plumbing Hotline, brought to you by our good friends at Two Beers. Life is much better after two beers, and also our good friends at Seattle Cider. Let me go back to something you said, because I think a lot of people are probably having a question, and maybe you can illustrate or talk about how it's different than what we see with Seattle or other teams. You talked about the passing routes, isolation passing routes that the receivers are running. What do you mean by that?
So what that means essentially, Ian, is this. In the NFL, even if you're playing zone coverage, let's say you're on the outside, and the Seahawks, we know, do play a lot of cover three, but outside the numbers, that essentially becomes man coverage. It's just a technique issue. You can play with zone technique or you can play with man technique, but you're playing man coverage essentially because the single high safety is in the middle of the field, and if routes are run outside the numbers, it essentially becomes man coverage. So what you get with the Eagles is, they're asking their receivers to have to win against what is essentially man coverage. And certainly in the slot, you get the same kind of thing. So they build their offense essentially as a timing rhythm offense. That's the playbook. Keep in mind, the Doug Peterson playbook comes from Bill Walsh, Mike Holmgren, Andy Reid, Doug Peterson. It's the same playbook. Now, it's a big playbook, so there's a lot to choose from, but it's the same playbook. So there's a lot there, and there's a lot of what we call combination routes where you can help your receivers with your route concepts. But if you just ask them to win one-on-one, then your receivers have to win early in their routes, and the quarterback has to feel comfortable delivering the ball within timing. Those two things are not really happening with any consistency.
Well, I would think a lot of the timing, Greg, would come, you know, in the issues timing-wise right now with Wentz. And as you mentioned, you know, he's not seeing things. He's just tentative, as you mentioned earlier. I wonder how much of that, too. His offensive line isn't helping him a lot. They've lost a lot of guys to injuries. I mean, that seems – listen, Russell Wilson, as good as he is. Patrick Mahomes, as good as he is. Heck, Tom Brady is struggling mightily this year against pressure.
Yeah.
Nobody – likes to see pressure. I have to think, and I'm wondering, as you look at that offensive line, how many of the issues the Eagles are having are also coming from that offensive line.
And that's a great point. And the other point that goes with that, the corollary, is Wentz is not a compact thrower. So the closer the bodies get to him, the tougher it is. Because Wentz has an issue that he's always had, and this is something that needs to be coached every day. You know, the great quarterbacks, for the most part, there's always exceptions, but the great quarterbacks, for the most part, a Brady, a Breeze, have repetitive mechanics. They do the same thing every time unless the defense demands that they do something different. Wentz mechanically needs work every day, Ian, because essentially Carson Wentz is a little bit of an overstrider. His delivery is a little elongated, so if you overstride, he then has to catch up with his arm. And because he's not by nature a compact thrower, he then has to catch up. And so what happens then is he pulls back. In other words, there's no weight transfer because he's overstriding, trying to catch up, and he can't step through the throw. He almost has to pull back, and that leads to sailed throws, which we've unfortunately seen too many of with Carson Wentz this year.
Greg Cosell with me, Seahawks and Eagles tonight, Monday Night Football. Seattle's defense, I mean, with Carlos Dunlap has made a difference, at least statistically
has
made a big difference. Jaron Reed's been a better player. He's been a better player. Again, statistically, what are you seeing on tape as they go against that beat-up offensive line and a struggling Carson Wentz with Dunlap there now, Reed playing better, and obviously they get Shaquille Griffin does come back tonight. We're expecting him to play as well.
Yeah, I think that Dunlap's made a huge difference because not only can he rush the quarterback one-on-one, but you're seeing a lot more stunts. You're seeing a lot more. And he's very good as what we call TE stunts, where the tackle goes first as the picker, and the end Dunlap then is the looper behind that because he's a very long, athletic guy, and there's a little Gumby to him. You know, you wouldn't call him explosive in the way, let's say, for people who remember old timers like myself, maybe you remember Ian, like a Bruce Smith. He's not like a Bruce Smith, but I mean, he's a very explosive athlete given his size and his length. So I think he's helped tremendously. And it's funny you mentioned Reed. I think Reed's a really good player. He's fought injuries, but I think if he's healthy and can play, I think he gives them an awful lot inside. He's always been a little bit better pass rusher than I think people have given him credit for, but he needs to be healthy and on the field.
Is he the picker, or is it Collier who you see doing the pick when they're using Dunlop?
Well, it could be any number of guys, because the picker, obviously the picker is important, because sometimes the picker can get through and get the sack depending on how it impacts the offensive line. And from everything that's being talked about tonight, you're going to see Jason Peters at right guard, and he has not played a snap of right guard this season for the Eagles. They made that move in training camp, but then when Andre Dillard, who you know well, was going to play left tackle, he was going to be their guy in his second year, and I believe he tore his pec. I think that was the injury. He's out for the season, so they moved Peters back to left guard. So now they're going to have Jordan Mulata back at left tackle. He had 3 or 4 starts there and looked like an improving player. But now Jason Peters is at right guard, hasn't played a snap there all season.
It's just a mess. Let's flip the other side of the football. Seattle has a tandem in receivers, and I think part of the problem you're talking about with Wentz, he probably doesn't have truly elite receivers like maybe he had a couple years ago, like top-end guys. Lockett and DK Metcalf are on pace to be only the second twosome in Seattle franchise history to both go over 1,000 yards in the same season. And so, I mean, it's an exciting time in that regard to watch those two guys. How do they match up with that secondary for the Eagles?
I'm trying to think who that other pair is now. Now you got me thinking about that.
I'll tell you at the end. I'll let you stew on it for a second. I love watching the mind grind right now. I can see this. This is perfect. I like it.
One of them, let me just throw something out. One of them wasn't Sidney Rice, was it?
No, it was, I'll tell you this, it was in the mid-90s.
In the mid-90s. Okay. Oh, God. All right. let's go back to the task at hand.
Okay, you got it.
Well, this year, the Eagles have chosen to play a lot more man coverage. Now, whether they continue to do that remains to be seen, because opposite Darius Slay, who's obviously a high-level corner and you would think would match up to DK Metcalf, not would think, he'd have to, because the other corner is Avonta Maddox, who's 5'9". Now, Avonta Maddox is probably a slot corner when all's said and done in this league, and I think that's an area the Eagles need to address in the offseason. But you might see them play more zone tonight, because I'm just not sure as good. And I like Maddox a lot, and obviously Lockett is not 6'4", 230, but I don't know if that's a good matchup for Maddox. I just don't. They may see it that way, and they may stay with man. They play man a lot. Cover one has been their foundation coverage in all year. We'll see. I mean, this could be a Tyler Lockett night.
It sounds like, my guess is, I think we talked about this last week going in with the Arizona game, we're going to see probably early on, I would assume Seattle early on, maybe the first play or two from scrimmage, they'll probably put DK in motion. Would you expect to try to see what, try to read what they're going to try to do? Are they going to, is Slay going to follow him or not? I mean, I would expect we'll see that early on.
That would make sense early. Plus, I'd also be a little diverse formationally, and I might put DK in the slot, which they've done more this year than they certainly did in his rookie year. Because you want to see how the Eagles are going to match up. The Eagles have been hurting in the secondary. Like I said, Maddox, he's been their starter basically all year when he's healthy. Roby Coleman will be in the slot because LeBlanc is out. So, you know, I think this is a good matchup for Seattle in this game.
One thing that we haven't, I mean, listen, it's a struggle for Philadelphia, as it is for every team, Greg, in the NFC East this year. But one place that I know it looks like they are still the same in a lot of ways is their front on the defensive side. They were stout against the run last year when Seattle played them in both games. It was hard, tough sledding up front. Yep. That front four and Brandon Graham, a very good pass rusher. You know, they get Carson back tonight, so it's Carson and Hyde. So they do have their two-headed 1,000-yard rushers. But running against this team is sometimes a challenge, isn't it?
Can be, yes. That's the strength of their defense. You know, they still have Fletcher Cox. They have good players up front. The key thing here is the Eagles linebacking core. The Eagles linebacking core has been very up and down. It would not surprise me to see the Seahawks play some more snaps of 12 personnel with two tight ends and get the Eagles in their base defense, because their linebackers in their base defense would be T.J. Edwards as the Mike. It would be Singleton, who, by the way, has probably been their best linebacker. And I think he's a Canadian League guy who, you know, came in. And he's actually played good football. He'd be the strong side backer. And Duke Riley would be the weak side backer. So linebacker has not been the strength of the Eagles this year, even before injuries, because they obviously had Nate Gary, who was a starter, and he's out. So we'll see. And maybe Gary's due back at some point, but I'm not sure if it's tonight. But the point is, it's been a weakness for them all season, and I think that's an area you'd love to attack in the passing game.
Yeah, Seattle's going to have an interesting situation because they'll have a new starting right tackle. Bowie is going to go in there. Shell's not playing tonight, but they do move Lewis back to right guard playing center. I mean, have you ever seen anything like that? I mean, listen, we just talked about the quarterback. We had a practice squad wide receiver play quarterback for the Broncos. We had a guy that was arguably one of the best rookie offensive linemen in the NFL last week. Play center for the first time by all accounts. He's never played high school, college.
He struggled a little center. Bit too.
Yeah. But he goes back to right guard, which makes him a better offensive line.
No question. But, you know, I'd be curious, like I said, with the 12 personnel, because I think you want to keep the Eagles in their base. You want to attack those linebackers in the passing game and see what you can do. Because then you still have Lockett and Metcalf on the field, so you can do a lot of things.
Well, and you have two pass. I mean, Hollister and Disley can both catch the ball too, which also gives you. Yeah, I mean that's Olsen being out obviously it hurts him in some ways, but Hollister's been a nice player for them the last couple of years. I think you'd agree. And Disley, you know, waiting to see a little bit more from him as well.
You know, Disley to me is one of those players. Again, he's not in an offense that features the tight end, as you know. And I'm not saying that he's Travis Kelce, but I think he could be. He could put up more volume numbers if he was throwing the ball more. I don't think he's a bad athlete by any means.
No, I agree with you. The two big leg injuries probably kind of come into play. Maybe he's still trying to work his way back. All right, I gave you all that time. The two guys, so Lockett and Metcalf are both going to go over 1,000 yards this year. They'll probably have about 700 yards more than this other tandem did, and I'm going to guess at least a half dozen more touchdowns. Any idea?
It's driving me crazy, but I'm not going to get it, even though you said the 90s, so...
Galloway and Blades.
Okay.
1995. Galloway and Blades in 1995.
I never would have gotten Blades. Galloway, I probably would have gotten with a little more time. Would have gotten Blades.
I would have, if somebody would have asked me and I had not looked it up, I would have gone Blades and Largent back when they played briefly. I think they played 1 year together. I think it was only 89 they really played together, and I'm not sure. Blaze didn't put up big numbers that year.
Galloway, man, he could run now. He was just one of the smoothest looking movers, over the years. That guy was really smooth, and he could run.
And Blades was a special player for Seattle too. I mean, he was a good player. Brian Blades was too. I mean, that was the other trivia, our other wide receiver trivia. Before I let you go, is always before Baldwin was named, and I think as an alternate, but before he was a Pro Bowler a few years ago, the Seahawks had gone all those years, like I think 20 plus years without having a Pro Bowl wide receiver, and the previous guy was Blades. That was
really
after the. Yeah, people will point out Alex Bannister, but he was a special teams guy. So, I mean, actual wide receiver in the Pro Bowl, it went Largent, Blades, all the way, had to jump all the way up to get to Baldwin.
So Galloway was not in the Pro Bowl.
I don't think he was. Yeah, it was odd. And that was probably before guys were opting out. A lot of guys get in there. So it's a little bit different deal. So you are the best. Good to see you today. I like doing it this way. Maybe we should do this again in the future. I'll Kevin Shockey's in charge of all these things. Maybe
we'll I'm always here,
Yeah. I know. I'll let you get back to work and we will check in with you normal week. So we'll get double dose of Greg Cosell. We'll get you again on Friday this week as we get ready for next week's game as well. But enjoy Monday Night Football, Greg. I appreciate your time. Greg Cosell brought to you by Seattle Cider and Two Beers.